the executive director of the Manchester-Boston Regional Airport, our own Ted Kitchens. Good morning, Ted.
Hey, good morning, Jack. Great to be with you.
Well, you have a...
I don't know if I deserve that moniker, but I certainly do appreciate you saying that.
Well, tell me a director of a regional airport that has managed as effectively as you, and you've come from some big ones, and probably I hope you stay here until you're done, because you've done a great job. But let's switch gears. I don't think your job gets boring, because you get into the, you come out of one season, whether it's going into like Thanksgiving and the holidays, then you get towards spring, then you have the vacations, and now all of a sudden you have a lot of people through the month still going back and forth from New England, Maine, New Hampshire, our listening region, down to hubs that you have now covered so well, whether it's North Carolina, Greensville and South Carolina, both sides of Florida. So give us some great updates on the customer side, because you're always doing something.
Sure, and that is exactly kind of where we find ourselves right now, between winter break and a little bit of college spring break right now in the month of March. And then, of course, we've got our public school spring break coming up here in April. So this is beginning to be the start of our busy season, as we then swing into summer and then end with October, of course, and all the leaf peepers coming up here. But yeah, we've got some really great service enhancements here. American Airlines is adding some flights. They're actually bringing back what they call the mainline aircraft to Charlotte. So it'll be a full-size aircraft, not a regional aircraft, heading down to Charlotte beginning in April, bringing back a fourth DCA flight starting in May. And then, of course, all the new expansions with Avelo and two new airlines, and Breeze and Sun Country joining the family here this summer.
Yeah, and I'm not seeing any pullback on consumer demand. Are you, Ted?
No. There's a healthy amount of demand. I think the consumer is. They may have pulled back a little bit during the winter time and a little bit into January and February, but we're seeing some really good traffic levels out of the airport right now. So very pleased.
And it's interesting, because I was spending some time in Florida myself. And still doing the show and all that, but I'm just amazed at the migration patterns. New Hampshire and Maine are somewhat of an older state. You and I are getting younger, but most people are aging, right? Even J-Dog,
yeah,
by the way.
We found that fountain of youth, yes.
Even J-Dog, Ted, recently hit a notch, older J-Dog. But when you go to east or west coast of Florida, I'm just amazed it's kind of that Maine-New Hampshire connection and that Delray East Coast side, and then the West Coast side, of course, Naples, Fort Myers, right up into Sarasota. You get just so many people are coming from all over the country still, and it hasn't been that harsh of a winter. I know we got a dumping last weekend, but you know what I mean. We've had an early spring, and it's just people right. want to be in the South. And some of the building projects, Ted, like, we had the director, the president of Welland Park, which is in Northport, Florida, the second fastest growing city in the country. They're building 25,000 homes, not 2,500, 25,000 right. homes, yeah. And they're selling them.
Yeah, and that area just sees no end to that development. I think eventually it's going to skip north of Tampa and go up into the Palm Harbor and all the way up through Newport Richey and that whole western part of Florida, heading up to the Big Bend. But, I mean, certainly we're looking at that area as a growth market. Breeze is going to come back in October to start the nonstop flight to Fort Myers. So we went last year without Fort Myers with Spirit, but Breeze is going to start that again back up in October of 2010. And just a little bit of about what Breeze is. Some people may not know who they are, but essentially they're JetBlue 2.0 in a lot of ways. To put it simply, it was founded by the same gentleman who founded JetBlue, a gentleman by the name of David Neeleman. Great onboard experience. I think if people love JetBlue, they're going to really love, what they find on Breeze Airways. So highly encourage everybody to take a look at them.
Where are they? What are their feeder markets, Ted, out of here?
So right now they'll start June 14th going into Charleston, South Carolina nonstop and Orlando nonstop. And then October they're going to go to start the Fort Myers service.
We have a dog in the studio today. All right, Ted Kitchens, thank you very much. Manchester, Boston okay. Regional Airport. We'll have Ted's interview up on the site on demand. John Decker, on White House correspondent. Speaking of President Biden and the Mexican president, how's the president doing? I know it's early. It's been an interesting week, more on the Trump legal side and maybe social media side, but too early to tell, but it's going to be a race. And, of course, Robert F. Kennedy Jr. has a wealthy running mate.
he does, that wealthy running mate contributing a lot that allowed him to broadcast that Super Bowl ad. So I think that that is what he's hoping she can bring to that ticket. As it relates to Joe Biden, he has benefited post-State of Union address, according to a recent poll from Bloomberg, well-respected news organization. It looks at seven battleground states, and Joe Biden has a little bit of momentum in six out of those seven battleground states, closing the gap with Donald Trump to make it essentially a dead heat. And I think that that is not an aberration, Jack. I think we're going to see more polls showing that it is an essentially dead heat between Joe Biden and Donald Trump for this rematch in November.
And, you know, John Decker, I just yesterday I was having with Matthew Barlow, one of our political experts out at D.C., a little back and forth, and I'm not going to hold you on this. I have seen a lot of things change in presidential elections over the years. And this Biden, Trump, they both race to their party nominations. Table set. Here we go, round two. You've been steadfast saying that. Joe Biden's not going anywhere. Biden, Trump, round two. But I have to tell you, and I know people on, you know, Democrat, a lot of people have disowned Robert F. Kennedy Jr. I'm not saying I'm a Kennedy, I'm not promoting him, but I'm pointing this out.
Okay.
For better or for worse, he's a lot more known right now than Ross Perot was, or some of the Green Party candidates, for example, Al Gore and G.W. Bush. And if he can get it on enough ballots, including New Hampshire with independent voters, I think it changes. Yeah. It changes the model.
Back in 1992. But, you know, Ross Perot is the high watermark. He got 19% of the vote back in 1992, but zero electoral college votes. So when all is said and done, you know, when you look at Robert F. Kennedy, he has zero chance, a 0% probability of winning the White House. He is a spoiler. I don't know who he takes more votes from, but he is a spoiler. There's no doubt about it in this election cycle.
Oh, I agree. No, he's not going to win. But if this race is that tight between Biden and Trump, and he gets on, for example, New Hampshire's ballot and 20 other states, you know, could be interesting. All right, John Decker, thank you.
I agree with you on that. Absolutely, Jack. Bye-bye.
Our own White House correspondent.
Good morning, New Hampshire, powered by Sig Sauer. Now, back to Jack Heath on the Pulse of New Hampshire.
And before, we're going to ask our guest coming up just to give me a moment here to break some pretty significant news, because this one was not forecasted. I've heard some back channel murmurings, but not forecasted. J-Dog, we're getting reports that Representative Ann Custer, New Hampshire's 2nd Congressional District, longtime office holder there, seemingly unbeatable in that 2nd Congressional District in terms of her fundraising and her reelections over the years, not running for reelection. That just coming out this morning. We're hearing from D.C. to hear that Representative Ann Custer is calling it a career in Washington, telling some she will not seek re-election this fall. Now, I guess, might as well make more news. Good morning, New Hampshire. The Pulse of NH is hearing, too, from reliable sources. U.S. Senator Jeanne Shaheen, talk about the political sweepstakes here, senior member of the delegation who's not running for re-election this fall coming up in November, but the next big Senate race in 2026 is planning to run again. But again, Ann Custer this morning, we're hearing, is not going to run in November. She's out. So that opens up the 2nd congressional district. Who knows? Maybe our own Dr. Vic will take a run on that. I think he has a home and bow. Well, in the 1st district, though, Representative Chris Pappas is running again. Of course, he's been on the show fairly regular. And one of his challenges on the Republican side, someone who's well known in the State House, Russell Prescott, Republican, 1st Congressional District candidate, joining us live. Good morning, New Hampshire, the Pulse of NH. How are you, sir?
I'm doing great. Thank you. How are you?
Doing okay. What's your, I know it's not the district you're focused on, but what's your reaction to this Custer news? I did not expect that this cycle.
Well, first of all, you have to thank a person for doing their job, getting elected and, doing the job of the work of the people. We can have disagreements on how well a job they did, but all in all, when you give your life to public service, it's an honor to be elected, and she served, and I have to give kudos to anyone that wants to do this, because it's such a commitment to do the work for the people of New Hampshire. It is a love, and it's a joy, and that's why we do it. I'm happy for her, for her retirement.
All right, let's talk about your focus, your race. I guess, what are your main points? What are you hearing from people when you go out and about? And let's talk a little bit about why you're making a go of it again, what you're thinking, what you're looking at, and can you be successful in terms of winning the nomination? I know you have some challengers.
Absolutely. The reason why I'm in this race is because I did start early last year, just speaking with everybody and that I know, and making sure that the lane was open for running again by speaking to the other candidates that I ran with in the summer of 2022. And the green light was there, and I decided with my wife that if I could raise the money, I would see if I could get pledges, I'd sign up for office. And that's exactly what we did. In the first quarter that we ran, we outraised Chris Pappas in our first quarter. And the reasons for running, of course, border security, energy independence, fiscal responsibility, following our Constitution and keeping government limited as the way it was designed to be, to take care of justice for our a system of law enforcement. We're not utilizing our law enforcement at the border in the way we can, according to our laws for immigration. And this is really the highest and most important thing I hear in the district. We got to take care of our border security and, you know, have Homeland Security do a better job, help law enforcement along the way, and Veterans Services is also part of that, that's coming up in the trail.
Russell Prescott, you're listening to Live Good Morning Hampshire, former member of the Executive Council, Republican running 1st Congressional District. Also, he was a member of the state Senate, I believe, 23rd District. I'm not sure. I think it was 23rd. Yep. Okay. 2010 to 2016. And running for Congress. And by the way, we're probably going to do some debates with your Republican challengers as we get into the later summer months. Would you take part in a debate in our studio with the challengers?
Yes. It was a good time 2 years ago to do that. I'll gladly do it again. You do a great job.
Let me ask you this, sir. Some would say you may not be a. I know your first focus is the primary. That Chris Pappas, coming from Manchester, is tough to beat. Good in ranked highly in constituent services. Been big on veteran support. And some would say that district. And you could talk to past office holders that the one way you could be successful if you won the primary was a wave this next fall, and it might come down to the presidential stuff in states like New Hampshire and independent voters. Do you see if it, and then there's no question it's Biden and Trump again here, but it could get complicated with Kennedy, Robert F. Kennedy Jr., if he gets on the ballot here as an independent. But do you see any kind of a wave this fall? Where are independent voters at? You're after Republican primary voters. I know that. But you and I know that these races are decided by independents. And they kind of just, I hate to say this, they kind of like that big weight on the middle of a seesaw in a playground. And if they go one side or the other, we just asked Jeb Bradley, Jeb. There's a wave. What do you see in this fall?
I see very, very similar things with the wave that occurred in 2018 for the Democrats. Independents made their voices known. They were disgruntled with the environment at that time. They did bring the House of Representatives and the State Senate under Democrat control, but in the Seacoast, where I grew up and where I've run my business for 40 years and served for, at that point, 7 or 8 years in a row, people voted me in because I have common sense, because I listen well. I believe that public service is an honor to be there, and if we don't pay attention to each individual that gives you a call, you're not doing your job, and independent voters want to have someone that is accessible, and that led to my reelection in a wave Democrat year because of independents understanding that my object of being a public servant is to make sure I give good customer service and make sure we take care of people at our state level, and that won't change for me. It's been what I've done my whole time and career, and that's how I set myself apart in that respect, that independent voters understand that we do have a two-party system, but they're looking for someone that will listen and work with them. And that's what I've done.
Let me ask you before I let you go. You mentioned immigration and the border, that UNH survey speaks volumes. 83% of voters say it's a top issue. But let's switch gears. If you are the nominee, Russell Prescott, Democrats, and imagine Representative Pappas, the money from out of state will be Prescott favors a ban on abortion. and abortion rights, abortion rights. And I've asked some of the Republicans running for governor the same question. Do you support New Hampshire's current law, which has no restrictions through the first 6 months, only in the last trimester? Yes or no? And if you don't, how would you change or alter that? What's your position on this? Because the Democrats are going to try and make it the number one issue.
Sure. I do agree with what the legislature has done. It has put safeguards in there for over 6 months. And the other thing is we have to realize that states' rights are hugely important. When in 1787 they drafted the Constitution, and they really couldn't have gotten that accomplished without the commitment of the 10 amendments that call the Bill of Rights. And states have these rights to be able to, give people the power to negotiate and get their representatives to do the will of the people. And that's where that should stand. So when I'm a congressman, this is a states' rights issue.
All right. Well, I appreciate the time. We'll get you back again if people want to learn more. Russell Prescott, and I'm sure the website's pretty basic and easy to find. If they want to learn more, what's the best way? And thanks for the time on Good Morning Hampshire, the Pulse of Nature. What's the best way to learn more?
PrescottForCongress.com.
All right. Make it a good Wednesday. Thank you.
Thank you.
Rick Kaiser has been a regular guest and visitor to New Hampshire and someone who I've been humbled or blessed to get to know a little bit. And I think the world of him. His home is out of Florida, near the Navy SEAL Museum in Fort Pierce. And if you get a chance at all, go to the Navy SEAL Museum in Fort Pierce, Florida. I tell friends you're going to spend not an hour or two. You'll be there better part of half a day. Rick Kaiser coming to New Hampshire on the speaking tour. And he's a former commander of the Navy SEALs for a lot of years, SEAL Team 6 and beyond, and legendary in that community, although he hates that term. How are you, sir?
I'm doing good, Jack. How are you?
Good.
It's a former Master Chief, not Commander.
Okay, former Master Chief. How does it feel to be an author now?
It feels like, I can barely read, right? So actually writing was a stretch for me. So.
We have to seriously,
it's
we have... We have to do a serious interview about the book. You're coming up to speak. A lot of people are excited. Tell us about what's coming up. Tell us about the book. By the way, when you write a book, you may not like it, Rick. It's like when you write a song. You got to promote it.
Yeah, you know what? I guess I'm not a good promoter, but I've been fortunate to have a lot of good friends here in New Hampshire, and Steve McMahon from the Boys and Girls Club invited me to come and speak to them in about an hour, and I will come and just tell stories. That's what I do. I run a museum, so it's easy for me to tell stories. And the book itself isn't about war stories or operations or this. It's just about funny things that happened in my life that kind of changed me who I am.
Well, the book Frogman Stories, it's on my studio console. I get blessed with a lot of books from people who come on the show. Rick Kaiser, that's with a K, folks. Get the book anywhere, Amazon, you name it, Kaiser. Rick, Frogman Stories. And Rick has put a lot of thought and some fun. It's some fun stuff in it, too, by the way, Rick. Well, it is. I've been to these events at the Boys and Girls Club, and they're wonderful events, and I think you're going to be a great speaker. Tell us a little bit about the book, though, Rick, a little more than just some fun stories. What made you want to write it? What feedback you're getting?
Well, the book started basically when a lot of things started was COVID, right? So I was at home. I can only do so many projects at the house, I ran through my wife's whole honey-do list, right? So I was like, oh, okay, what can I do now? So I was like, yeah, you know what? I'm going to write a book. So I started it back then, and it took me about a year to complete it. And then it was sitting on my computer for about another year, and I just basically said, if I don't do something, it's just going to not go anywhere, right? So I called some friends of mine that are authors, like Admiral Bill McCraven. I called him and said, because he's written a couple books like Make Your Bed and Sea Stories, and I said, hey, help me out. Well, who do I call? And he basically directed me to his folks, and the rest of it's, afterthought.
Well, it does take, it's not an easy thing to do. It's, and you're right, a lot of times these manuscripts sit because you're not sure. Life and Leadership Lessons from the SEAL Teams, Frogman Stories, Rick Kaiser. Rick, refresh our memory a little bit. And maybe you'll talk a little bit when you talk to the business leaders and the kids and everyone in your talk. You say it's tomorrow?
No, it's about 30 minutes from now.
Oh, it's today. Okay, it's today.
Yeah, it's today.
Well, I'm not going to be there, but I'll be there in spirit. But, Rick, talk a little bit about your own background. What brought you to the Navy? What brought you to want to serve and go through Bud School and become a SEAL? And then give us an update, if you would not mind, on the mission of the museum in Fort Pierce. And I know you've been busy working on one for the West Coast.
Yeah, that's right. So the bottom line is, you know, when I was a young person growing up, I always had a fascination with the water and watched Undersea World of Jacques Cousteau and stuff like that, and I wanted to join the Navy. So I went into the recruiter's office when I was 16, actually, at the time, and he had a pamphlet on his desk about Navy SEALs. And this is back in the late 70s, right? So I didn't know what a SEAL was. I took the pamphlet home, and when I came back, I said, this is what I want to do. I told the recruiter that, right? And he's like, absolutely, right? Because I was one of the I was a quota for him, right? So he was like, this is an easy one. This kid wants to join the Navy. I don't even have to ask. And he says, but you got to go down to Great Lakes, Illinois, because I grew up in Milwaukee, and that's where the Navy base was. And you have to go through a screening test where you have to take, you know, physical screening from running, swimming, push-ups, pull-ups, sit-ups, and you have to do it for time and to become a SEAL, right? So I had to get my mom to drive me to Great Lakes, right, because I was a minor. I always think about that. So, you know, this big SEAL has his mother drive him to do tryouts, right? And anyway, I did well and, you know, went on and had a great career, 34 years in the teams, at SEAL Team 2 and 6, and I don't regret a minute.
You know, Phil Taub and Julie, founders of Swim of the Mission, good, great friends of yours, said that he wanted to know if there's a lot of oceans in Milwaukee, Wisconsin. I said I'd ask you. But, Rick, let me ask you this. One of your talks, and maybe you'll mention it in your on your leadership talks, said that at one point, I'm sure you weren't alone, I'm sure every person who went through this thought about it, you thought about quitting in the underwater, you know, the basic, the 7 days of trying to get through Bud School. Can you just talk about that for a moment?
Hell Week. Yeah, so Hell Week is a time where they really test your fortitude, whether you are going to make it or not, right? And that's basically a week long of hell. You're not allowed to sleep, and you're constantly doing something, whether it's swimming or paddling boats or whatever. And about Wednesday night, I was starting to feel a little bit sorry for myself because I was tired, asking myself, why am I here? Why am I doing this? And just when I think I was feeling at my lowest, I don't know if they realized what they were doing, but the instructors put all of the class in the ocean, right? And the ocean in San Diego is cold at the time, and it was in the 50s. And it immediately jolted me out of my little pity party. And I realized that, you know, I can do this, right? They're not going to kill me. So, but it helped me, you know, get out of that slump and keep going. And I think a lot of people are in that situation every day, right? And you got to pull yourself out of that slump somehow, whether it be a friend, whether it be self-motivation, whatever. And I think that's what kept me going all these years.
Great stuff. Well, on the way to give a talk now in about 25 minutes or so, Rick Kaiser, Frogman Stories, Life and Leadership Lessons, available just about everywhere. And look forward to the summer, right? You're going to be bringing a crew back up again as we do the Swim with a Mission and now Fish with a Mission.
Yes. I am so happy that I have so many great friends, and we look forward to coming here. And it's not only me. So we bring, you know, 30, 35 SEALs here from all over the country, and we have to turn down people. Because they all love to come here. So it's like, it's great. So we have Medal of Honor recipients. We have, every, you know, walk of life in the SEAL community is going to be here in July doing all sorts of things, from the swim at Newfound Lake to the fishing to the Green Beret Challenge, which it probably isn't that hard. But but anyway, I haven't done it yet, so we'll see.
And Ken Corona, one of your good friends who did so much in the museum over the years in Fort Pierce. And, folks, if you get a chance, Fort Pierce, Florida, East Coast, you know, if you fly into Orlando, many of you do, spend a day. Really, go see the museum. It's so real and wonderful. I have a pretty short attention span and stuff going
really?
Back to – yeah, yes. Stuff going back to World War II when people didn't even know about the SEALs and – the beaches and with Normandy and right on through. So the stuff, the choppers, the equipment, and of course Ken Corona, good friend of mine. He thinks the tuna open. He goes, Jack, is that like tuna fish in a can? That's what Corona thinks. All right, Rick. Make it a great one. Enjoy.
Thanks, Jack.
Thanks, Chief.
Yeah, come visit me in Fort Pierce. Thank you.
Michael Graham, NH Journal, NewHampshireJournal.com. Good morning, Michael.
Good morning, Jack. How you doing? I thought the big news was 83% of New Hampshire voters think immigration is a serious problem. And then Annie Custer blows up the news cycle with this very unexpected announcement. And I mean extremely unexpected. I've talked to New Hampshire Journal, whatever, we talked to about seven or eight people this morning since the announcement came. Nobody saw it coming. And just so you know, NH Journal has been regularly seeing news emails from Annie Custer fundraising since the beginning of the year, a very aggressive fundraising. In fact, I'm flattered to say she's included New Hampshire Journal articles in some of her fundraising emails. And she's also the head of a 100-member group in Congress called the New American Coalition. It's a kind of progressive but not super – like it's like between the squad and, you know, the middle. And she's been the head of that, and she's been touting that a lot. So this is very unexpected. It is not the case that people saw her edging towards the door.
Yeah, I did not see it. I thought, go through another cycle. She certainly had a pretty good, darn good record on reelection. I did not see that. And what do you think? Do you think it's the environment? Do you think it's personal? It's tough to speculate.
I have no idea. The two, things that are being bandied about, one is it's something personal, something's come up, and obviously, that's, we wish her well and hope that that's not the case. And the other one is that there's talk that the Biden administration, who she has been a huge Biden backer. I mean, even compared to the rest of the delegation, she's been over the top, and there's talk maybe she's got a job in the, in the administration, but you wouldn't have to quit your seat or announce you're not running reelection. The other thing that's got people confused is normally when you say, I'm not going to run and you're Annie Custer, you do what Carol Shea Porter did in the first district, which is say, have I introduced you to my chief of staff or whoever the person is, that you've got lined up? Hey, how about the state senator so-and-so? And there's none of that. No one that any Cheryl talks to has heard anything. So it's very surprising. It doesn't change the fact that it's still a heavily Democratic seat. It's very unlikely that a Republican will win it. New Hampshire doesn't elect a vote for Republicans at the federal level. But it could be an exciting Democratic primary.
Who jumps in?
Particularly if Custer doesn't have somebody picked to jump in.
Well, I was going to say, Michael, what are some names will float quickly here, won't they?
Oh yeah, we'll see. I mean, I know that Cindy Warmington was long known to covet this seat. She can't be super thrilled that now she's in the governor's race. The seat's coming open, but hey, the filing period. People forget this because New Hampshire has the worst primary system in America. We are the bottom. We are the worst. The primary filing doesn't even open for almost three more months. You can't even file your paperwork until, mid-June. So a bunch of people could get in. Warmington could decide that, the governor's race isn't what she really wants. There's talk that State Senator Becky Whitley might be interested in it. The people who are running for executive council, whose names I don't want to mispronounce on the air because I don't have them right in front of me. So we don't, and the look is wide open. Who knows what's going to happen? And on the Republican side, obviously, Lily Tang Williams has been running hard for a while. Bob Burns says he's definitely going to take another look at it. I know people are calling Keene Mayor George Hansel, but of course, we already know how that race turned out because that was the race 2 years ago. Bob Burns won it with the help of $1 million of Democratic money backing him with illegal mailers in the 2nd Congressional District.
All right. Well, let's talk about that UNH survey, Michael.
Yeah, and what's interesting to me is two things. One is, the UNH uses that panel system. They don't do a traditional model. And they tend to get numbers that are more – I'll put this way. If I were expecting someone to undercount – how people feel about immigration, I would expect it from the UNH Survey Center. They found that 83% of Granite Staters say illegal immigration is a serious problem for the nation. That includes, Jack, 67% of Democrats. And for people who call themselves independents, it's 88%. So how many issues, Jack, you cover politics every day, how many issues can you name that are an 80% 12 or 80-10 issue. There just aren't many. I mean, you know, you're at that point, you're down to mom and apple pie, and not even apple pie, because apple pie sucks. So it wouldn't even get 80%. And so those are huge numbers. And yet, New Hampshire Democrats continue to double down on their opposition to immigration enforcement, their opposition to sanctuary cities. So they are, even though they've only got 15% of the voters with them, even though 67% of their own voters are against them, Democrats like Joyce Craig and Cindy Warmington continue to say, we oppose increased immigration enforcement.
Yeah, no, I don't know of any issues. Today, nothing really gets above 50% on anything, right? So 80.
Well, normally that's how it looks, and I think
hold on, Michael. Except for your love for country music's up there.
Exactly, but you know, one thing that I noticed about this is UNH also asked which candidate do you think is better to handle legal immigration, Trump or Biden? And Trump, the top pick, but just barely. It's 46-41%. Jack, who thinks Joe Biden is better for illegal immigration? Nobody.
No.
Everyone who said that is lying. That means that these people are so anti-Trump, so hardcore Democrat, that even on immigration, they pick Biden over Trump, and that's 41-46. So what does that mean? That means that in a sample that is absolutely anti-Trump,
yeah,
in a sample that is absolutely strongly Joe Biden, comparatively speaking, it's still 83% say illegal immigration is a problem. And I'm just saying that if you go to NHJournal.com, if you follow us on Twitter, Democrats in the state legislature are still saying this is a racism issue. Republicans are just bigots.
Yeah. It's going to come back to
Ray Buckley says you're fascists. Yeah. And that's just not a strong spot to be when 83% of the people around you are, quote, fascists.
And the independents are the ones. Hey,
88%. Yep.
Yeah, you didn't hear it from me. Well, you did right now. Colin Van Ostern, where does this is his residence or domicile? Second district.
Well, the thing is, you don't have to be in the district when you run, and it's very easy to move. And Colin Van Ostern's name has absolutely been mentioned by the great mentioners already this morning.
I'm telling you right now, that's it. So just put it in an envelope.
I'm fine, but he won't be alone. Here is the big question for NH Journal. We've been watching the Democrats and their campaigns for the past four cycles, and we hear from progressives who are always complaining that this is a state that Bernie Sanders carried twice. Where are our statewide progressives? Where are our local progressives? And the fact is, what progressives in New Hampshire do is they do what they're told. Unlike the cranky Republicans in the Freedom Caucus and the MAGA Republicans, they don't, they complain, they shout, they cause trouble. The progressives sit on the back of the bus, do what they're told, say, yes, Chairman Buckley, whatever you say, yes, sir, we will obey. Will a real progressive, someone who reflects the left, the heart of the Democratic Party on the left, actually run in this primary? That's what I want to see. Because thus far, Buckley and Shaheen and Hassan have been able to keep progressives off the field. And so we'll see if that stays that way.
All right. Michael Graham, NH Journal, and New Hampshire Journal, NHJournal.com. Thank you, Michael.
Thank you.
Aaron Rial, NBC News Radio national correspondent, talking about DJT, Donald J. Trump's net worth. On paper, it may have changed a little bit in the last 24 hours, but what a time where you talk about unprecedented civil fraud-type settlement or bond amounts, a winning lottery ticket last night in New Jersey. I don't know who won it. I don't know if Senator Menendez won that. But then again, Donald Trump's social media. What a time. And he's the presumptive nominee. Aaron Rial, I guess when it comes to Trump, don't rule him out with marketing and media genius in terms of how to make some net worth.
Oh, he does it, but he always tends to do it. So just wait a week because he will likely be back on top, which is where he finds himself. So his net worth gained about $4 billion in the past couple days because his Trump media and technology group, they started trading on the NASDAQ. They started trading this week, and then yesterday shares soared. They were up about 50% at one point to $75 a share. They closed out the day yesterday at $57 in trading this morning so far. They're already up about 15%. So this is a company that this is also, by the way, not Trump's first time with DJT. He traded on the New York Stock Exchange before trying to raise money for his casinos. Very volatile, ultimately went to a penny stock. Now, this is a media company, also very volatile, and the underlying asset of this media company is Truth Social, his social media platform that he started because he got kicked off Twitter because of January 6th. Essentially, that was the reason that they gave. So, long story short, Truth Social isn't really making any money. It only has 5 million subscribed users, 1 million monthly active users. It actually only brought in $3.4 million in revenue last year, but it paid $37 million in internet expenses. Now, that's not to say that it's the first tech company that has gone public while in the red. Most tech companies do, but retail investors like this, institutional investors, pension funds, they are looking to see if a business can grow its user base and then ramp up sales quickly in order to get ad dollars. By its very nature, Truth Social is quite niche and not really appealing to a global crowd, at least not today.
And, you know, Aaron Rao, one thing that's unpredictable, like Donald Trump, is he is the presumptive Republican nominee. Strike the word presumptive. He's the Republican nominee. And I don't know what's going to happen this fall. I really don't. I think it's going to be closer than people think. Unpredictable. Joe Biden, Trump, but you never know. Kennedy's now got a wealthy running mate as an independent. He could be a spoiler. Yeah. He could play a spoiler role. But if Trump ever were to be reelected, you know, his followers and that social media, and it might enhance the value of this thing because you know he's going to have loyal social media followers.
For sure. And listen, he'd be a president, again, of the global financial superpower and a global power. We're neck and neck at China now. It's valuable, and he has people that will follow him. But as of today, there's just not a lot of active users on Truth Social. That's not to say that a media company owned by Trump can't be valuable one day, but it is certainly not actually making revenue today. And essentially, the stock today is a meme stock. That's not to say that meme stocks and people who hold them don't make money. They do, but it doesn't mean the underlying asset is of textbook value.
All right. I appreciate it. Aaron Rao, NBC News Radio, national correspondent. Thank you, Aaron.
Thanks.
Lily Tang Williams, Republican, running in the 2nd Congressional District. I believe her home is in where? J-Dog, don't say where. Where, New Hampshire? Good morning, Lily.
Hey, good morning, Jack. It's called Nowhere, North Where.
Now, Republican running, I don't know if you expected that news this morning. I don't know if any of us really did. Are you surprised about Ann Custer announcing she's calling it quits?
Yes, I was shocked, and I wish her well. I don't know what is the reason behind it, but me and my team have been working hard for past 6 months. We have gone to lots of community events and everywhere and speaking at the communities, and including town hall coming up in April. We were just going forward to be against her. Now we have to go against another Democrat who come in to run for her seat.
Yeah, and it may be Colin Van Ostrom, but what do you think the issues are? And is that a winnable seat for Republicans? It seems the 2nd District has been owned since Charlie Bass by Ann Custer.
Well, I'm not really a conventional Republican candidate. I am the legal immigrant who came here to live my American dream. And right now, the top one issue is border security. 83% of New Hampshire people are worried about illegal immigration, including some moderate Democrats, you know, who have sincere concerns about the safety and about this issue. I think I'm the best person to turn this seat from blue to red.
Lily, talk about immigration. I tend to agree with the survey. We had Michael Graham on earlier that you just cited, UNH. People do want the border fixed. They're tired of hearing about how many folks are here. We have no idea where they are, how we're going to pay for it. It's out of control. New Hampshire is sending National Guard troops to the border. Why is New Hampshire, into the southern border I'm talking about, not the northern, southern border down to Texas? It is a crisis. And then what makes it worse, you look at what's happening in sanctuary cities, and then we can't even agree on what we call folks who come into this country, including the alleged murderer and rapist of Lake and Riley. So people have had enough. What other issues? And just tell us a little bit about your story. You talked about coming here. Why? No one talks about legal immigration, playing by the rules, doing it right. I don't think you got a debit card and allowance every day when you came here.
Well, I told people that my story and my brother's story, I filed for petition for my brother to come here legally. He waited 13 years in China in line, and after we pay all the money, all the, you know, background checks, all the health screens, and he still had to wait for that long. And there are over 5 million to 10 million legal immigrants are waiting to be processed. If we really talk about economy need the workers, why can't we let those legal immigrants who follow our laws to come here, work hard, and live their American dream? For first 5 years, according to our law, legal immigrants come here cannot get on public assistance programs. So why are we offering financial incentives for the illegals to come here, draining our taxpayers' money, community resources, breaking the law, and they're trying to erase the difference between legal and illegal from Biden administration? Legal immigrants like us are very upset to say this is not American rule of law, and it's a crazy Democrat policies, and they are putting Americans last, and American citizens are becoming second class now because they cannot even get all the benefits that they are offering to illegals. So I'm telling people that this is a common sense issue. I want to truly represent the people of New Hampshire 2nd District and listen to their concerns. And this is their top concern. And I have a great policy proposals to counter Democrats' proposals.
Well,
we need to get those legals come in faster.
Yeah, well, you know what, Lily Tang Williams, you can tell us the website. But if there was ever a time, for someone who came to New Hampshire and the reasons you came and anyone who came to America and played by the rules and did it right, with immigration now front and center, with the southern border crisis and what's happening, if there was ever a time to get the story out there, your own story, this is probably it. This is probably the window. How will you successfully do it? Because the Democrats are very formidable in that district. They're going to have a lot of money. They're going to come at any Republican challenger, if it's you, saying you want to ban abortion. You know, you're a Trump, you're out of touch with most people. How do you make your story, your compelling story about legal immigration, more known in your race?
Well, my campaign slogan is about keep American dream alive. I see lots of American ideals and values and traditions are under attack. And people actually are hurting by Bidenomics. And, you know, Democrats all still support Bidenomics. I think this is the best year for a historical candidate to win this race and turn this seat from blue to red just by simply focusing on American dream stories and common issues that people are worried about. I think I can unite the party. I can unite the people because I love this country. I love New Hampshire. And where they live, free or die state, I love freedom. So I think this is the best time. I've been kidding people. My Chinese zodiac is a dragon year, and this is a dragon year. In Chinese culture, dragon's supposed to rise. Something extraordinary is going to happen. So I'm hoping people can get behind me and support me to win.
Tell me, Lily, a little bit why you think, because I've raised a question on the show a few weeks ago. Do you find it a little strange that nationally no one really discusses legal immigration? Those who come here legally, you and your brother, go through the years, the hard work, do it by the rules, play by the law, become naturalized, pay the money. Why is that never discussed? And it's almost cool now to be an undocumented migrant or something. Why is that?
Well, that I think I personally believe that both sides have been using this issue as a politics instead of a sit down together to offer sensible solutions to really solve our country's problems. And because Democrats had, you know, everything, every chamber of the government, and they did not do immigration reform. And I have people telling me they have been waiting for 14 years on social media ads to say, Lily, tell them, we are still waiting after 14 years. There are some people who are married to, you know, foreigners and cannot get their wives and kids into this country quickly. So this is not human, and we need to send a message to the world. We are country of laws. We welcome you as legal immigrant coming here, work hard, and, you know, we value meritocracy. But what Democrats are doing is getting those people come in and give them incentives. I think that they're trying to create a quick legal path for them to vote. If that's the agenda, people should really question that's on the back of American taxpayers and community resources, and increase crime, and have a national security issue. This does not make sense. That's why this issue is a top issue now, border crisis. And we need to call out the Democrat policies on this. And they're trying to erase the difference between legal and illegal. That just makes legal immigrants like me very, very upset.
All right. Best way to learn more, Lily, in terms of a website?
LilyTownWilliams.com. And we have been working hard, campaigning with a strong volunteer team and lots of young people. They are inspired by my American dream story. And I need the donors, and I need a more endorsement. I hope everybody now can publicly and come in and support me, and we're going to turn this seat and to a Republican.
All right. Thank you. Thank you, Lily. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
We'll get you back again soon. Thank you. Rory O'Neill, that's the Francis Scott Key Bridge in Baltimore, obviously a main bridge into the city and a connection with that I-695 corridor. We haven't heard, and maybe Rory O'Neill knows, as I said yesterday in the show, J-Dog, it can take upwards of a year these days if you're a home builder or a buyer to build a home. I can't even imagine, even if they throw everything on this. This is a 1.6-mile-long major league bridge. I don't even know how long it's going to take to get that thing rebuilt. And we're obviously talking years. I don't know how they do it sooner. I may be wrong, but Rory O'Neill, we're learning more. And I'll tell you, if it was 4 p.m, can you imagine how many lives would have been lost?
Right. I mean, amazing work by the police to get there as fast as they did to close off the traffic before ship collided with the bridge pylon. And credit to the two pilots, the Baltimore port pilots who were on that ship and were able to alert the local authorities. But boy, that could have been a much bigger tragedy.
Oh, certainly, certainly. And have you heard anything, Rory, on estimated time to rebuild, even if you throw everything on it? I mean, every resource with federal help, state, and local. I have no idea how long it would take to rebuild that bridge.
No, I think someone's working that out on the back of a napkin as we speak and really don't have a genuine, honest idea. The Army Corps of Engineers has been activated to help consult with the removal. But, this is going to be a massive cleanup project. But, you know, we've seen these bridges come down before. The Sunshine Skyway Bridge is the replacement for another bridge over Tampa Bay that a ship collided with decades ago. We saw more recently in Minneapolis as well.
All right, Rory O'Neill, NBC News Radio National Correspondent. Thank you, Rory.
Thanks, Jack.
Jeff Nelson with Liberty House, and it's in Manchester, the state's largest city. They do wonderful work year-round to support our veterans and to help veterans with transitional housing and getting on in a sober, good step forward in terms of work, employment. And he has an update on how many years are you coming up to celebrate the Liberty House mission, Jeff?
Good morning. We are in our 20th year. We started,
wow.
It was incorporated in 1993, and it took about 11 years before Don Duhamel, who's kind of the grandfather and co-founder of Liberty House, was able to get a place and fund and open the doors.
20 years, can you believe it?
That's a long time. A lot of veterans. We've served almost 500 veterans at this point with just our residential services alone, never mind our community vets who come in for food and clothing and those kind of things.
Right. And you know, these are veterans and people in their life. If they get a good hand up, not a handout, it can turn the corner. So tell us a little bit more again, the who, what, when, where. If people can't go to an event directly to help Liberty House, the website, how we can help, and really the services provided, Jeff.
Sure. Well, our website and our Facebook is a little bit more dynamic, and we get a lot of activity on that, and it's libertyhousenh.org for both. We have a number of fundraisers through the year. We do a lot of work. Our staff are phenomenal. Not only do they do a great job with our residents and our community vets, but they also basically put on four or five fundraising events a year. The next one will be our 20th anniversary, then our Touch a Truck, then golf tournament. So we're busy all year long with our fundraisers. And
Jeff, maybe just your story. What brought you to want to serve and help lead the mission? And just tell us about your own story and why you do what you do.
I have a close connection with veterans. My family has been serving since the Civil War, and I've worked with a lot. I'm a retired police officer, so I've worked with a lot of veterans in that field. And it just seemed to be a natural fit. I was really just looking for a ministry where I could really continue to give, and the veteran community was a great fit. And it's just very rewarding. And like I said, we have such great staff who have been tremendously committed over the years. You can go back, and it's really filled with some great people.
Yeah, it is. And, you know, thank you for your service, because being law enforcement is, in my opinion, is public service, serving the communities. Jeff, and I was mentioning our coming up my 10th annual Make 12 Hours Count for Veterans Count, part of mm-hmm. Easter Seals. I just think that people, and I think you'd agree with this, maybe you could comment. I sometimes hear from people, Renee Plummer's talked about this, sometimes people don't know where in the community they can lend a hand. I've been amazed at how generous people are out there. Most people, they want to actually do good. They want to help. They just sometimes don't know about the Liberty House. They may know. I got a call yesterday from the folks at the Operation Delta Dog down in Hollis. Mm-hmm. They may not know. They just, and you know what? Why should they, right? I mean, and I think sometimes if you do a little research, Liberty House, I can attest, is one of those. You know, get involved a little bit. Think of ways you yourself could have an event with Jeff. Could be a small event. Could be just getting 20 people to your house for a coffee and raising a few hundred bucks for their mission. But get involved and help. And I think there's nothing better than helping our veterans and their families. But it really is good for the soul. I mean, it really, I don't know, I mean, we recharge these things we call computers in our hand a lot, cell phones. And I think it's like a recharging of the soul to help someone you don't even know.
Yeah, there's a lot of really great people in the VA system and that support veterans in the government. But I really believe, having been with Liberty House now for going on 8 years, really it's the nonprofits. It's the grassroots nonprofits. It's the people like you speak of that really make the impact, because it is giving to someone else who is struggling for whatever reason.
Yeah.
A lot of vets don't like to ask for help. They don't want to be connected to the federal right. government, and I understand that, but really it is a grassroots effort that we try to capitalize on, and there are just so many great, we're blessed with great donors, and that's what it's really all about.
Amen. Well said. I mean, I could not say that better. It really is. We have so many private, privately run nonprofits. You don't have as much red tape scattered across our region. And great stuff. Again, 20 years in the making. Best way to learn more, Jeff, and help is how?
They can certainly give us a call, 603-669-0761. They can stop by at 221 Orange Street, or they could find us on Facebook and or our website at the appropriate beginnings to libertyhousenh.org, and we welcome visitors. So.
And one question we had once in our VA segments with Kevin Forrest, they were talking about transportation. What if someone wants to volunteer? Are you looking for any volunteers at the Liberty House?
We can always use help with transportation if somebody wants to get involved with that. We struggle oftentimes with getting guys to appointments, to court dates, any number of things. And there's only three of us full-time, so it's always helpful. Four of us full-time, excuse me. To have somebody that might want to just volunteer to drive guys to the appointments.
Thank you, Jeff, for what you do. We'll talk to you real soon. Jeff, I appreciate it. Liberty House. Thank you, Jeff.
Thank you. Thank you much. Have a good day.
Our friends at Southern New Hampshire University will take a break from some of the politics today on this Wednesday, our Penman Pride segment with a lot of great stuff here. J-Dog, there's a fashion show coming up at St. Anselm's April 20th from 4 to 6 p.m. at their Sullivan Arena. When the fashion show brings together students from SNHU and St. Anselm, both great partners of ours, Southern New Hampshire University with our Penman Pride, of course, St. Anselm, Neil Levesque Institute of Politics. And I believe, J-Dog, we have a couple students, Noah Gutierrez and a student of St. A's, and also, I believe, Rebecca, is it Tessima?
Yeah.
How are you?
Hey, how are you, man? We're doing great. Thank you so much for the introduction. You guys play great music.
Well, I want to talk about the fashion show, how it gets started, but you know what? I'd be remiss if I didn't talk about you two, young, you know, leaders of tomorrow. Tell us a little bit about who you are, where you came from, you know, why you're involved in this, if you like your time at St. A's as well as Southern New Hampshire University. Rebecca, you're the Penman Pride here. Let's talk about you a little bit. You're a grad student. Tell us more about yourself.
Yeah, so I was born and raised in Ethiopia, and I just came here for my master's degree.
Yep.
And Nu is actually part of my family because my dad actually learned here.
Awesome.
And part of, like, a home to me. So I'm excited to see what it takes me.
Yeah, what's your graduate degree in, Rebecca?
Oh, I study information technology.
You will not have a problem getting a job, Rebecca. You probably know that, right?
Oh, no.
All right, Noah, tell us about your background and your time at St. A's. The Hawks, right?
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. Hawk Nation, baby. My name is Noah Gutierrez. I am from Manhattan. I'm from Inwood in New York. I'm a business and finance double major here at St. Anthem College, and I am not from Ethiopia. I did not have that type of fun upbringing, but I'm Dominican. Shout out to all my people down there in New York that are tuning in right now. Love y'all.
That's awesome. Well, you both are drilled down on some pretty good majors, I mean, in terms of futures, and it's great to hear young people, you know, working hard and thinking about that. Tell us about the... is it the Laissez-Faire Fashion Show? What is it? How did it get started? Both of you, you can jump in. I don't care.
Yes, sir, man. So this is, simply put, the Laissez-Faire Fashion Show. However, we're not marketing this as a show at all. To be quite honest with you, this is so much more than just one-of-one garments and clothes. Like, everything about this to us is an experience, man. This is 52 kids, 52 models that, you know, we're able to genuinely just sit here and believe in each other. And we've been booking these events and confirmations and speaking to these people and that people since October, like since our last semester. And, I mean, this is something that both colleges, our student bodies have wanted in the making for years before us. And I'm so happy and grateful for the team that we've been able to create and the creative community that we are literally curating right now in the greater Manchester community. It's amazing, man. This is more than just a fashion show. We're about to change the culture. This is going to be everything we need.
I love your passion, Noah, and I think that's a good segue to Rebecca maybe talking a little bit about the idea, you know, what was behind two schools working together and what that's been like.
So when Noah came to our school talking about Laissez-Faire Fashion Show, we didn't know how his idea was more than just a fashion show. It was building a community, coming all together, trying to know different cultures. And we were really excited to be part of it. I'm actually one of the models that's in this fashion show, and we are excited to see what this brings to the future, and it's a great experience, not just for me, but the whole SNU community. And we're just excited to show what Laissez-Faire Fashion Show is all about.
Rebecca, I'll stay with you, and Noah can jump in a minute here, or both, but tell us about the theme. Noah talked a little bit about the mission beyond, it's not really about fashion, it's about building community. Tell us about the theme.
So we don't have a theme for this event. It's more of just creating and getting people out, expression and individuality of mm-hmm. people. So there isn't a say where this is it and this is that. It's all about coming together and showing the different aspects of every individuality.
Noah, talk a little bit about what you've learned through the process or skills that you may have picked up you didn't really count on maybe going through that you picked up and learned.
Let me tell you, man, over-communication, My God, efficient communication is definitely things that I've been learning and just really trying to properly communicate with people and really use their strength. And I mean, one thing that I'm genuinely trying to communicate out to all my models, and I hope y'all are listening to this right now, like, you know, you are everything that you say you are, and you've got to be confident in yourself, man. You got to be on your side. And I would say if there's a theme for this event, I don't know if we can pin it to one thing. I don't think anyone has ever seen anything like what's about to happen on April 28th. But we're communicating between ourselves, man. I'm learning everything about these people, their cultures, everything in Manchester and SNU and St. A's and the histories behind the colleges. I'm learning why this is so important and why we need to do this, man. This opportunity wasn't here before us. It's likely not going to happen after us. It's got to be us.
Awesome. Now, maybe both talk a little bit about, you mentioned 52 models and 13 clothing brands. How did you audition, put it all together with the clothing brands? How did that all come about?
It's the power of social media, man, and bringing together all of these communities. I'd say all of these brands have some type of personal connection to at least one of our models. We're pulling these 13 brands from 9 different states all around the country. All of these designers have some type of personal connection to us, whether they are some of our homegrown friends, our hometown buddies that we share juice boxes with on the playground, or these are kids that graduated our colleges a couple years ago or graduated colleges near us a couple years ago. Mm-hmm. And, you know, they were able to reach out and, you know, nice enough and saw the vision with us enough to genuinely believe in us and provide us with their garments. And shout out to them, man. Like, this is more than just clothes to them. Like, yeah, we're trying on all these clothes and doing rehearsals, and you can see a little bit of every hometown on here. Like, awesome. You can see Maine, you can see Manchester, you can see Atlanta, you can see New York, you can feel it. And that's exactly what we want to bring on the 20th.
What about any hurdles you had to overcome, Rebecca, to kind of get it all together, because it's coming up? What about things you had to, okay, a little obstacle here, we can overcome that?
Yeah, so we're trying to get everybody on the same page. It's the obstacles that we're facing is trying to get their vision, like, get our vision. This is how we're going to do. We're trying to just let them see what Laissez Faire Fashion Show is all about and trying to get them on the same page. And we're trying to get to know one another. That's kind of the obstacle, because we don't have the same mindset doing all of this with the size of us having schools, midterms, finals. This is more than creating just a show, but a family. So we're trying to build a brand by ourselves.
Well, I'll tell you, it's reassuring or uplifting to hear younger folks so fired up, so passionate, or I'm trying to think, J-Doc, how to put this there. I like Rebecca and Noah's, each how they're coming at this, but they're determined to make this a successful event. They're fired up. They're determined. I love it.
Passionate. Yeah.
Passionate. Thank you, J-Dog. And if you want to learn more, what's the easiest way to get information about those interested in actually going to this? Tell us the who, what, when, where.
Yeah, man. So this is going to happen at St. Anselm College, April 20th. Our showtime right now is 4 to 6 p.m. So feel free to come in nice and early. We will have some of our St. Anselm College football players ready to greet you and welcome you in. They'll guide you into our parking lots. The easiest way to reach out to us will be St. Anselm College. You can either email us at moc@anselm.edu, or I'd say you can reach out to us on Instagram or any social media at SAC_men of color. But once again, that's SAC_men of color.
Well, I appreciate it, Noah. I love your passion and salespersonship, if you will. And Rebecca, I love this story. Thank you both very, very much. Good luck. Good luck. Penman Pride, Southern New Hampshire University, and St. Anselm College. Thank you both.
Thank you so much.
Thank you so much.